Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
Hunting boots are a critical component of any successful hunt. Whether walking a short distance to your blind or trudging miles through rugged terrain, your feet are carrying the load. Without the right boots, you could give up early and lose out on that trophy just over the ridge. At Midway USA, we make selecting boots for your next hunt easier. With just a few clicks of a mouse, you can decide on what's important, like waterproofing, insulation, size, width, and savings. For just about everything for shooting, hunting, and the outdoors, check out MidwayUSA.com.
It's crazy how, and that's one of the things that I always try to explain to people, like why fly fishing is so special. It's like you really are reversing the food chain. Like you're taking, you know, you're taking bits of animals that eat fish and feeding them to fish. You know, like it is really the best, most sadistic reversals that we have in this game. So, and it's crazy how well they eat it. My name is Nick Davis, I'm the owner of 239 Flies, and you're listening to the Tom Rowland Podcast.
At Midway USA, we know the AR-15 is one of the most popular rifles in modern American history. Known for its modularity and widespread use, it's often considered essential to any gun collection. The essential things you need to run an AR-15 are usually always in stock during shortages, things like magazines and 5.56 ammo. Whether you're looking to buy a new AR-15 or buy parts for your modern sporting rifle, log on and for just about everything for the outdoors, shop MidwayUSA.com. Knives, machetes, saws, and shears, multi-tools, shovels, swords, axes, spears, hatchets, and tomahawks. If it cuts, snips, slices, or chops, Midway USA has it. Find great gift ideas in our huge selection of pocket knives and other everyday carry folding knives. Make a statement or create a family legacy with one of our top-of-the-line hunting knives. We've got a great selection of manual and electric sharpeners, too. For just about everything for the outdoors, check out MidwayUSA.com.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the podcast today. Got a great one for you. My good friend Nick Davis from 239 Flies is on the podcast today. He's been on before. He's a popular guest. He's a funny guy. And we talk about all kinds of things from fly tying to snook fishing to tarpon fishing. And he's got some very interesting opinions and ideas on flies. I really enjoyed it and got to hear about his new shop moving locations, and it's beautiful. You got to check it out. But before we get to that shop, I want to tell you, or to that show, that part of the show, I want to tell you about a couple of things, all kinds of things going on. We have a giveaway happening with Tackle Direct, Hawks K, Lowrance, Yeti, Lithium Pros, on and on. Lots of sponsors associated with this. It's a fishing vacation to Hawks K. You get to fish with Saltwater Experience. You get to go out to dinner. You get to have an awesome time in the Florida Keys with a lot of additional prizes from sponsors like Tackle Direct and Yeti and Lowrance and Lithium Pros and on and on. And it is for you to join right now. You can go to tackledirect.tv, and you can sign up for that right now. You don't want to miss it. There's probably going to be more prizes added and more as we go along. This contest is going to run for a little bit, so we want as many people to enter as possible, and that is you. I hope you win. Another thing that we've been doing lately that has been pretty popular, and I have actually been enjoying it very much. If you know me at all, you know that I like to read books. I like to watch motivational movies. I like to do all kinds of things to help me learn from others and apply them to my own life. And that is very cool, whether that's a quote or a book or a movie or whatever. It's just something I like to do. And I have written these Mindset Mondays over a couple hundred of them now. And what I do is I write a Mindset Monday in 400 characters or less. You get it if you subscribe to this list. You get it every Monday morning at 9:10, which is probably exactly when you need it. You want motivation to kill the week ahead of you, and that is what this will do. I'll give you a little sample, something that just went out on Monday. So if this appeals to you, you text 305-930-7346. You text the word mindset to that number, and you'll be on the list, and you'll get one of these every Monday morning. 20 years from now, you'll be more disappointed by the things you did not do than by the things that you did do. So throw off the bow lines, sail away from the safe harbor, catch the trade winds in your sails, explore, dream, discover. That was Mark Twain. This one is self-explanatory. Do it. Live life with no regrets. You know, sometimes you need to hear things like that. So I've taken a bunch of my favorite quotes, a bunch of my favorite kind of things like that, put them together for you. And if you like that, you're into that kind of thing, text the number 305-930-7346. Text the word mindset to that and you'll be in. All right, here we go with Nick Davis. Hope you guys have an awesome day. Nick, what's up?
Not much, man. Living the dream.
Love the shirt.
Thank you. My, these are actually, this was a semi like a COVID project. My, my 14 year old daughter was, we're locked in the house for, you know, all of April, most of May. And we're also working on getting the old shop kind of like dialed in. We just got, you know, we were nearing the end of our time at the old shop, but still like always need t-shirts. And she was bugging me. She's like, I need a, Dad, I need like a part-time job or something. I'm like, you're 14 in the middle of a pandemic. Like, what the hell do you want to, like, great timing, you know? So, you know, I always try to beat into her mind that, you know, you don't have to always take the conventional route. You can kind of go it on your own and teach some entrepreneurship when I can. So she loves the tie-dye. So, I bought her some shirts. I got some, you know, some 239 fly shirts made, just some good old fashioned like cotton guys.
Yeah.
And I was like, here's 78 shirts, like tie dye them, go nuts. She's like, we need to make a run to Walmart. I'm like, we're not tie dyeing 239 fly shirts with Walmart tie dye. That shit's not happening. So luckily she knew more about the tie dye game than I did. So yeah, that's what we did all. Well, that's what she did all during the shutdown.
That's
just
cool,
tie dye.
That's cool.
Shirts. So we still got them. It's one of probably our best selling items.
Is that right?
Every 239 flies tie dye shirt is made with, you know, semi-legal child labor, AKA my 14 year old daughter.
Yeah.
Now well, 15.
That's cool.
So
I'm right in the process of buying Bonnaroo tickets for 2021 Bonnaroo. That's something that my daughter and I have done for the last 5 years. We've gone there. It surprises a lot of people that I might want to go to Bonnaroo, but Bonnaroo is, it's amazing. And it's, really
I was going to say, you got to back it up. Like what is Bonnaroo?
You don't know what Bonnaroo is? Bonnaroo is like,
I do not know.
The largest music festival on the East Coast, east of the Mississippi, you know? And, so you hear about these other ones like Coachella and some of the other ones that are really huge, but Bonnaroo is a 4 or 5 day music festival.
Okay.
It's in Manchester, Tennessee, and they have great bands. I mean, everybody you've ever heard of, like, there's something for everybody there.
All the staples like Korn, Tool, Jimmy Buffett.
Yeah, you can have all of those people.
All the staples.
I don't know
like
if Jimmy
Korn,
Buffett's
Tool,
ever.
Tool, Jimmy Buffett.
Yeah. I don't know if he's ever, if Jimmy Buffett's ever played there, but you have, I don't know, I got to see Sturgill Simpson there, Tyler Childers there, and I also got to see in the same day I saw Post Malone. So, like, you can see.
That's a sick concert right there.
Dude, it's amazing. But the way that the whole thing is set up, it's really set up nice. Like you can decide, okay, I'm a big Sturgill Simpson fan. I'm going to go get front row seats. Okay. So they have this pit up front and the pit holds like 250 people, but it's a huge area. So if you want to, you can set aside time of your day. There's a whole calendar of everything that's going on and what time and all these different stages. There's a bunch of different stages, 4, 5, 6, 7 different stages. And you decide, okay, I'm going to go and spend some time in the pit line for Sturgill Simpson. And so if you wait like an hour, 2 hours, probably for one like that, maybe Post Malone might be like 3 hours, but you're tired. You need something to eat. You're like, you're going to sit down for a little bit anyway. So you pick the pit line and you can get right into this pit area. They'll only let 250 people in. And if you wanted to, you could like lay out a blanket right in front of the stage.
Let's
like there go. Would be, there'd yeah, be 200 yeah. people in front of you. 50 people are probably on blankets behind you. Then there's 200,000 people behind you there. There's no pushing. There's no shoving. Now what goes on behind you? I don't know what goes on back there. I never get in that.
No one's got time for that.
But
yeah,
it's like,
no one's
I'm got either, time for that. I'm either way in the back or I'm in the pit. And, but the way that they have this pit thing set up, it makes it so fun. And like we saw, my daughter and I have seen everybody she wants to see. I mean, I don't know, every band that's hot right now, goes there basically. So anyway, your shirt makes me think about Bonnaroo, and, there's a lot of tie dye at Bonnaroo. There's a lot of things at Bonnaroo.
I was going to say, we can take the sleeves off of one for you too, if you like. We do make the sleeveless model. We are sort of known for that here at 239 Flies, but
nice.
Very
Suns out, guns
I've
out.
Got the template. We can do it. Yeah. You can take the traps out a little bit too, like completely up to you. It's all customizable.
Yeah. Kind of Randy Macho Man Savage kind of style where
exactly.
there's just like some strings
and they're cotton,
right there.
So if you got to tear it, you can like no big deal. You don't have the, you know, the resistance of polyester.
Well, the funny thing is that in a crowd of, I don't know how many people go to Bonnaroo, nobody ever fights, nobody ever pushes, nobody ever gets upset with one another. It's the coolest, nicest, gentlest crowd known to mankind.
It's not a sporting event. People aren't taking sides.
No, but also
everyone's there to just
They're there to chill, but also like there are longer lines at the water lines than there are at the beer lines. Because generally it has been this whole time, it's been in the summertime. It's hotter than hell. And you know, if you start drinking beer at 11 o'clock in the morning, you're not going to make it till 5, not in that heat. It's just, and you see people go hard in the first couple of days and then they just fall out and they can't make it. And then the people that are there for the duration,
they're in the ER while that line to get to the pit is down, you know, down to about 15
right.
minutes.
But it's so quick. You know, you just notice right away. It's like, ooh, I mean, I need to drink water all day I'm sweating my ass off out here. And like, you think about drinking beer or liquor.
Doesn't even sound good.
You would go downhill so fast. But anyway, your shirt reminded me of that. And that's the tickets just went on sale yesterday for 2021 because I don't know. It was in 2020, they canceled it for this summer. And then they rescheduled it for September and then canceled that. And it's kind of looking like, I don't know when we're going to have live events again, you know?
Yeah.
And now it's kind of coming back.
My girlfriend and I had tickets to go see Kenny Chesney in May. And like, we were pumped, like we're huge Kenny Chesney fans. And we got floor seats, got a hotel room in Tampa, like a sick hotel room, had this awesome weekend planned out. Boom, canceled, done, still not doing it. Like we can still go to Tampa, right? And make the best of this. Yes, we can. But like, damn it, we're not seeing Kenny Chesney, not this year.
I think
can't wait for live events again. Like
it's coming back.
I think they are too. I think 2021 will be back to normal, at least in that, or 2022 will be back to normal in that sense. I feel like there's a lot of people getting vaccinated right now, and it seems like the cases are going all the way, not all the way down, but they're definitely going down. So we're doing fly tie nights again. Like,
you are?
I mean, this is our first month of, this has been our first, since our grand opening costume party / Halloween party, that was, you know, it was probably about 40 to 50 deep in here. And
really?
Like this new shop is huge. Yeah, it's huge. But it also kind of sucked because like 50 people could spread out in here, no problem. And it did seem, you know, semi-empty at times. And there's 40 people standing around and everyone's in costume because it was our Halloween party. So wearing a mask was no problem. But it was such a pain in the ass to like teach and talk and communicate through a mask. It was just, it totally sucked the fun out of the environment. So I was like, we're just not going to do this until we can do this again.
Was it okay to talk through a werewolf mask or like,
oh yeah, you could
any kind of mask.
We didn't, I mean, I preface this by saying, like, I was not the mask police that night. Like, we had an open bar, you know, like our boys from Treaty Oaks showed up and like we turned our point of sale into a full service bar. And the girls came down and gave us like this awesome like show. Like one of the Treaty Oak rep had like this giant like punch bowl full of just this green gin drink that was absolutely fucking phenomenal. Like I'm pretty sure there wasn't alcohol in it, but there was dry ice in it, and there was like it was a show, man. It was awesome, but it was just hard to talk through a werewolf mask and.
Did you think, now see, this would be my first thing. I'd be like, okay, we're going to have costume night and we're going to have a fly tying contest and you have to tie a fly with parts of your costume. Cause you got like craft fur, you got all kinds of shit.
We'll do that from now on. Like every party that we have, every Halloween party that we have, that is now the new caveat. Thank you for that. That's a phenomenal idea. That's why we do these things.
Yeah.
Brainstorming and networking. Yes, that's where it's at.
It's also going to you're going to come up with some new names for these flies. Like this is the werewolf. This is the axe murder victim.
This is the Jason special.
Yeah. Yeah, it's good. We're on to something.
Yeah, no, it's a great idea. We're absolutely doing it. It's absolutely a phenomenal idea. We're doing that now.
Right on. So what was it like to move into your new shop?
Oh my gosh. It's been a good move. I mean, it was a real risk. We wanted to move. I know the last time we did the podcast was pretty much right in that time where we were, I don't know if we were shutting down or had shut down. It was about a year ago. Mm-hmm. And we were kind of right on the cusp of, you know, do we stay here indefinitely and just have a nice little business, you know, here and, you know, or do we move into the end unit in our plaza, which was available. It was three times the space. It was right on the road and, you know, a lot more exposure. And it's a much bigger, nicer shop that we could now, you know, put more than $3 into and armed with just a little bit of knowledge and a little bit of information and a little bit of like, hey, we've done this before. Like the learning curve is not going to be nearly what it was the first time. So, you know, we kicked it around for a while and we were like, this is like, we got to do this. Like if we don't, I'm going to be on my deathbed wondering, you know, and I don't want to do that. So, you know, James, my business partner, you know, it was been on me about this since, I don't know, 3 months into the old shop. Like we're going to run out of space. Like there's nothing in here. We've got two t-shirts and four slap boards full of doll hair, you know, like calm your ass down. Like there's nothing we need to do. But yeah, we got in, we broke ground, July 1st. And, it was funny. I was actually in here with my daughter on July 1st, like, all right, kiddo, like we're getting to work. And I'm not very handy, Tom. Like I'm not really that handy. Like I can do fine detail, like monotonous, you know, finish work. Okay. Like moldings are my specialty. Like I'll do some shit out of some moldings. Okay. But knocking down something, carrying it out, like, you know, bleeding from your hands. That's not where I live my life.
That's me. I can do that part, but I can't put it back together. I'm really good at knocking it down and carrying it out. That's me.
Well, see, like that's even better because I'm not even good at putting it back together. Like once someone puts it back together, I'm good at like, you know, cleaning it and putting my name on it. That's what I'm good at.
Yeah.
So
see what I did there?
It was exactly. Yeah, check that out. That's a Nick Davis original. Like how about that? But no, so, you know, my brother Jim showed up. He's been on me. He was on me about it for a long time too. Like I want to renovate a shop, man. I'm like, oh, like you and James both are just like, let's do this. I'm like, you guys realize that like someone does have to pay for that. Like that's a big jump in rent and expenses. And oh, by the way, we got to fill that place up. But no, we decided that we were going to do it. We're going to take the risk and see what happens. And, you know, July 1st, my daughter and I showed up and, you know, we were in here like, okay, we can finally, man, like I looked at a couple of things that were glued to the wall and, you know, it needed to be demoed. And I like hit it with like a hammer and I'm trying to like, And I look at Chloe, and Chloe looks at me, and she's just like, maybe we should wait till Uncle Jim gets here. I'm like, let's do that. Let's throw some stuff away. Let's load that dumpster up. So that was, and then he shows up with, like, you know, his Yeti 5 gallon bucket full of demo stuff. And he's just like, walks right in the door and just starts swinging. This place was nothing but dust and rubble in about, I'll say 4 days. Wow. Like, it was down to the tile. So I'm pretty sure his back still hurts, but.
But you got it going. That's good. And what? How's the reception been? Yeah. People happier with the larger place?
Oh, for sure. Absolutely. It's been, you know, every day now still. Like, we opened the front doors October 1st. We got moved in, moved everything over. And I think our first, like, official day in business was October 1st, which wasn't bad. I mean, to renovate a, you know, 2,600 square foot space from, you know, this needs to be all the way redone to, okay, like, we're going to move all of our stuff in here, and it's going to be a little empty at first, but it's still more full than the last shop was when we moved in. Like, this is a really good starting point. You know, that's the thing that not a lot of people see. Like, when they put in a new Target or a new Publix or a new big business, that thing is stocked, shopped, and, like, ready to roll day one.
Right.
Like, they've got capital.
Right.
Like, that they have working capital. Like, small business? No. They've got, like, $4 left over because they had to put the floor in, and, like, hopefully we can make a mortgage payment this month, right? Because, you know, we got to put a new floor in a 2,600 square foot space. But nonetheless, like, we did. It was, you know, it had been on our mind for a while at the other shop, and we'd been saving, and you know, luckily we got done, you know, before the deadline that we set for ourselves and under budget. So
cool.
You know, it was pretty cool. But no, awesome. Every day somebody walks in saying, you know, I've lived here for 10 years. I've lived here for, you know, whatever. I've fly fished for 30 years. I didn't even know you guys were here. And we're like, do you turn on a computer? Like, all you got to do is search for anything fly fishing related, and like, we pop up. But nonetheless, like, and it goes to show you. And it was a real big notice for us, was that there's still a lot of value, and more value than people see, even in the age of technology today. The value of having a brick and mortar store that people can see, because people will walk through the door. Like, they've got, most people have 15 or 20 minutes when they're going from A to B, and there's an open sign on that window. Like, that's been abandoned for 2 years. That looks different. I'm going to go check it out. Mm. Oh, like, shit, it's a fly shop.
The 1911 is one of the most iconic firearms in history. Designed by John Browning, the 1911 was the standard issue sidearm of the U.S. military from 1911 to 1985. While Colt produced the original, almost every major firearm company has produced its own version. It's wildly revered for its reliability, crisp trigger, and is still a favorite for all types of shooters. Whether you're looking to buy or build a 1911 and just about everything for guns, log on to MidwayUSA.com.
You want to succeed, you want to fish, you want to be one of the greatest.
Tune in to West Marine's Life on the Water, presented by Costa Custom Boats, every Saturday night from 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV.
When did you get here?
That's cool.
Like, well, we've been here for 3 years. We were two doors down.
Yeah.
But
you always see, like, there's a lot, I mean, of the that. Importance of a location. Like, you always see that with restaurants and stuff. Like, there are just some locations that, I don't know, it kind of makes sense or whatever, but it's just kind of a difficult turn to get in there. There's not enough parking or whatever. And you just see one restaurant after another go out of business there, and out of business and out of business and out of business. And it's just like that little magic little piece where you have one that maybe is across the street and it's just easier to get into, or maybe more traffic goes by. I don't know what happens, but that one thrives, you know, and it's just these very small little things that make a big difference.
It's the kick-ass neon sign. That's what it is.
That's what you got out there?
That's what it's got to be. Yeah. I don't, but, like, I would love to have 16 neon signs. That's always been, like, a little daydream of mine, of just putting some, like, old school, like, you know, tattoo parlor or, you know, strip club, like, neon signs on the outside.
Like Michael Scott's.
Instead of girls.
Like Michael Scott's St. Pauli girl.
Yes. Instead of it being, like, fly... instead of it being like girls, 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 it'll be like flies, flies, flies.
Oh, see, now you're onto something again. There you go.
Yeah. Yeah. Instead of live nudes, it'll say live dudes. And like, they're just inside, like they're just like inside tying flies.
Yeah. That should really bring them in. You know, you are onto something.
No one's coming in. Like, yeah.
Well, I ordered something from you and I'm going to open it right now. This just came.
What we got?
This just came.
That
came. Yep.
That's phenomenal.
This is it. It just came.
Sorry I took so long to send that link. That's my bad. Jimbo is in charge of the shop now, and things get done.
Let's see.
That was another big learning curve. We can get to that later in hour two.
Sweet. So I ordered some flies. I'm going to be fishing here shortly. We got some Enrico Puglisi's. Those are pretty sweet.
Yeah, yeah.
You guys use a lot of those down your way?
A lot of them. A lot of them. Yeah. Just about almost exclusively.
Mm-hmm. Really? Over feathers. Like, what do you think? What do you think is better? Why do you like this better than feathers?
Well, there's a couple reasons why I like synthetics more than feathers, but I think that, how do I want to say this? There are, well, first, from a tying perspective, synthetics are much more consistent than natural fibers. Mm-hmm. So if you get a pack of EP fibers versus a pack of, you know, marabou feathers,
right?
Every single one of those EP fibers is going to be identical to the next one. Mm-hmm. So it is consistent. And that is, as you know, as a businessman, that is one of the most important factors of having a successful business is consistency. Like, consistency is staying power. Mm-hmm. So every single pack of synthetic materials is consistent. Every pack of natural materials is inconsistent.
Right.
So, you know, I've noticed that the older generations, like, they like the natural materials because that's what they grew up on. They didn't have synthetics back in, you know, in the day to play with. Like, we have all of the synthetics in the world now at our disposal. Like, and that's, you know, one of the things that I kind of, you know, make fun of all the time is, like, we specialize in doll hair. Mm-hmm. You know, like, we, like, you have a 2,600 square foot shop where you sell doll hair. Yes, I do. But like, it's all the same. So the action isn't there, but the profile is there. You can create a better profile with a synthetic fiber than you can a natural fiber. And they're much more durable. So a tarpon can eat that fly and you, 7 times, and it's still good. If that were made out of marabou and Arctic box, it's trashed after 1.
Right.
Now, if you're going to sit there and you're going to spend 45 minutes tying them, like, do you want it trashed after 1? Well, I mean, for big tarpon fishing, sure. Like, we might as well just be fishing with $100 bills if they'll eat it. We don't care. Like, the bill fishermen do that. You know, like, I'll pay $100 for a tarpon eat, like, all day. Who cares? You know, like, that's what you're there to do. You know, that is the sole purpose of life for the next 2 months is to hook tarpon. So, you know, but from an enjoyment standpoint, like, you don't have to sacrifice durability for action anymore. Like, you can tie a synthetic fiber fly, and every single pack of feather or every single pack of fibers is going to be the same. You can make 100 identical flies with them, you know, if you're a good fly tire, and you don't have to go hunting through packs of marabou anymore to find a good pack, you know. Right. You don't have to look through bucktails anymore to find the ones with the longest fibers in the midsection that you can tie your deceivers out of.
I mean, I had a guy tying my flies that was in Montana. His name was Craig Jansen. He was really one of the best fly tires I've ever had the opportunity to buy his flies or fish around. But one of the reasons, I mean, he was a pretty decent fly tire, but the best thing about him was that he had a really tight relationship with Dan Bailey's fly shop, and they would order all of their saddle hackles and their tarpon hackles and all their materials. And he would be the first one to sort through all that stuff. And he would be like, yeah, this one and this one and this one and this one, and I'm buying 50 of these. And everybody else gets the leftovers, you know, and, you know, if you can make that pick, that makes your flies so much better. And his flies never fouled. And, but you could have someone with exactly the same fly tying skills and inferior materials, and you might get a foul. You might get
flies, flies look like shit.
Right.
I you know, it's tie them on and it's like, I don't want to throw that.
Right. It is, you know,
and then I don't have confidence to fly anymore.
Right. The materials are the best. Now, when we look at some of these flies, you're talking about all of the benefits of the synthetics. And then here I've got an Enrico Puglisi one right here that is synthetic and mm-hmm. and natural. So you got rabbit on the back and kind of a toad type front body with like some, I'm going to pull this one out and look at it because it's got like some rubber legs in there.
Yes.
And when you're first learning how to tie flies,
let's talk about this.
This seems like a complete impossibility, but I do know the trick now of how to leave the rubber legs in there and trim everything else off and then have the rubber legs stick out.
Just pull that whole thing out. There you go.
Yeah. So. Wow.
Yeah, the rabbit strips.
There's some serious packaging that goes on into these flies here.
Right. One of the many reasons I love those flies.
Yeah. How is Enrico doing? I used to see him all the time.
He's doing good. We actually had a fly tying night with Enrico last year before all the madness hit. It was awesome. He came down and wanted to fish, but wanted to do it. Yeah, we're going to talk about that. Wanted to do a fly tying night, or wanted to do a video and go fishing and all that. I'm like, well, let's Enrico, like I got a videographer, you know, on staff, my boy, Patrick Ray, you know, let's shoot a little how-to video in the shop and, you know, do a kick-ass fly tying night. And that's exactly what we did. And like, he came down and put on a show for us.
Nice.
The trick is that you got to get like Enrico asked for a water because, you know, he's talking and, you know, it's hard to talk without a drink. Sometimes, you know, voice gets a little parched. But I was like, Rico, this is a fly shop, buddy. You know, they flush toilets with that stuff. Like, we don't have water here. He's like, what do you have? I'm like, all the Modelo you can drink. So you got to get two Modelos in EP before he, you know, loosens up and starts having a good time. That
right.
That's the magic. That's the magic trick.
The magic but trick.
Yeah. Let's talk about that fly.
Yeah. What do you call this one?
Rabbit's awesome.
Yeah. I'm a big fan of rabbit.
What is that?
This one.
Rabbit's a really good, see, rabbit's one of the few natural materials that I think will always have a place in saltwater fly tying.
Mm-hmm.
That rabbit is more consistent than most natural fibers. Most every package of rabbit hair is going to be similar to the one that it's tied with next to it. So rabbit is consistent. And it's also durable. It gets a little heavy when you're throwing it, but that's what makes it a great tarpon fly.
Yeah, but you're using an 11 weight. It shouldn't be too bad. And you might
you're using a telephone pole.
You might even trim that down a little bit. Like, you know, you could just
make some earrings out of the rest of it.
Yeah. Hey, when you're using rabbit to palmer, do you use cross-cut rabbit, mm-hmm. or are you cutting the hair off of the strip and then using that in like a dubbing loop or something? How do you do it?
So both work. It depends on what you're trying to do with your application. Like if you're trying to make a really bushy collar that's going to push a lot of water,
mm-hmm.
And also tying it on a little bit lighter of a fly or a little bit lighter of a hook, I'll cut it off and use it as a dubbing brush.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're looking for a little bit thinner of a profile, I'll use the crosscut stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, for one of my favorite flies that we've got in the shop is the Chacones. What's that damn thing called? The Tuscan Bunny.
Okay.
And he uses He uses that in a dubbing brush or in a dub. He dubs that and twists it into a dubbing loop and then palmers it. And it makes a very bushy, you know, where the fibers are sticking out perpendicular mm-hmm. to the hook shank.
Mm-hmm.
And it pushes a lot of water that way. It gets a much wider profile. But like in the Butts Big Money Minnow, shout out to my boy Brian Butts. When he ties that thing in, he uses a cross cut. And the taper on it is a lot more thin. So it's more of a redfish fly than it is a tarpon fly. But you still get the action of the rabbit on there. Because rabbit, I mean, you get that stuff in the water and it pulsates and it breathes and it does its own thing. So
right.
So that fly doesn't have to move you know, in the water forward or backwards for it to be moving.
Yeah, that's so important, man. I think that that is, I think that's one of the reasons why I kind of a little bit prefer feathers over synthetics. Like if I had to choose, I would kind of choose feathers a little bit more for some applications, not always, but I have seen the offshore, like the tuna and stuff like that tend to bite the feathers better than they bite the synthetic flies. I don't know why. I think it just shows up a little better for some reason. I don't know. Maybe they can see through it, you know, with the light just goes right through it, and they just, like, I don't know. I've had trouble getting those to bite, and then you just take an old lefty's deceiver bucktail with feathers, and it's like, it's on.
Throw it out there and done.
Yeah. But with,
it's crazy.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, like, it's crazy how, and it's one of the things that I always try to explain to people, like, why fly fishing is so special. It's like, you really are reversing the food chain. Like, you're taking, you know, you're taking bits of animals to eat fish and feeding them to fish, you know, like, it is really the best, most sadistic of reversals that we have in this game. So, and it's crazy how well they eat it too. Like, you know, damn well, there's hardly any fish that are out there eating birds. Like, that's not on their plate.
Man, you ever see that video of the trevally eating those birds? That was an incredible video.
That was pretty sick.
They eat them, man. And then the sharks are eating them too. On that Tiger Beach in the Bahamas, they have all that footage of them eating the cormorants and the baby cormorants. They just chow down on those things. But you're right. They probably don't eat them regularly. I don't know that a tarpon eats a bird. Maybe he would. A tarpon would probably eat a bird if it fell in.
I think a tarpon would be too lazy to eat
a
bird.
Like a robin?
Those things are just the laziest eating fish in the sea. Like,
I don't know, but if it was just flopping on the surface there, it couldn't get up, its wings are wet, and it was sitting out kind of in the middle of a laid up area. You don't think, like, that's what a crab does, and it just kind of makes little waves, and then all of a sudden,
that would happen.
Kapuya.
You're right. That would definitely happen.
I always like fish
baby
like
duck
that.
Flies.
Yeah. Well, I mean, when I was a kid, I used to just read Field and Stream magazine and dream, you know, there would always be the article in there about the largemouth bass that ate a bird or like, you know, a muskie that ate a duck. And I was just like, man, that's got to be the most incredible thing. I want to go.
Nature is so metal.
Never did I think that when I was a kid that I'd be fishing for things that would eat, you know, lots bigger things than that. But
nature's so cool like that.
I know, it really is. And when you see it happen, it's just incredible. So we got all these. You got me covered here. Let me talk about this one. This is this little Umpqua
megalopsicle.
Yeah, a megalopsicle. Well, it has a really good name.
That's what they're calling that one.
Okay, I like
it. Does.
Whose fly is this?
I couldn't tell you off the top of my head. I tie something similar.
But you didn't come up with a name. Oh
no!
Come on, dude. Nah. Who had it first?
I'm going to maintain. I'm going to maintain that I came up with mine before I even noticed those. But I don't know. I don't know.
Huh.
I don't know. I don't know.
So
how long
one's called
before.
A megalopsicle, and one's called a megalolipop.
Yeah. I did mine about 6 years ago.
I don't know. Something tells me one of those saw the other and was like,
I wouldn't be surprised. I've seen a few redfish ritalins floating around in catalogs, but
all right. So when you tie a fly like this or whatever, tell me what you're using this for. Cause it's got a weed guard. It's got a little deer hair collar. It's got a palmered, or whatever you call it, head, with the deer hair.
That's like, that's got like an Arctic fox collar, and it's got a deer body hair head. So deer body hair or deer belly hair float. They're very buoyant. When those fibers get tied onto a hook shank, they splay out, and you trim them with a razor blade, and it almost makes like a little cork on the hook shank. If you don't weight it, it will float, and pushes a lot of water. Deer hair is magical. Like, all forms of deer hair is magical when tied on a hook shank. It's really the closest thing to unicorn hair that we have in the game. You know, everyone's always trying to get unicorn hair. And about the closest thing we have to it is deer hair.
Yeah.
But that's a kick-ass little fly.
This is not Enrico fibers on the end like these other flies. What is this called?
It's not. You can tie. I tie mine with bucktail, but you can tie it with crapper. You can tie it with pseudo hair.
Is
you
this
can
crapper?
Tie them with. That is crapper. Yes. Yep. Okay. That one's crapper on there. And then, like I said, an Arctic fox collar and the deer belly hair head. A little bit of bead chain to get it down.
Mm-hmm. I like this because we have some situations where we'll get up early and you can throw to the tarpon on a real calm day. You can get big ones to eat something right off the surface. And for a long time, we mm-hmm. threw what we called a frog. And the frog was just basically a mouse, really. I mean, it was just a big mm-hmm. spun deer hair, and then it had some hackles coming off the back. But what would happen to that is that sometimes, occasionally, it would they would blow it out of the water because it was so lightweight. But you needed it to we would even put that zinc on it. Remember that stuff that you mm-hmm. it was like yeah. sinking. It was supposed to sink your leader, but we would put it on the deer hair, and then you could get it to float down in the film. But then what I started doing is tying a gurgler with rabbit body, like a crosscut rabbit body. And so then that rabbit hair would like hold it in the water just enough to where the tarpon wouldn't blow it out of the water and they could get their whole mouth around it. And that seemed to make a big difference in hooking.
You can also take a little bit of like lead wire or lead free wire, which I also wonder what they make that out of, and then tie it and tie it around your leader. I normally put it around the hook shank, like right around the eye of the hook.
Yeah.
But you can take it and you can actually put it up near the bite tippet and then zap it in with a little bit of like loon UV. You can just have it on the boat and then, you know, like hide in the sun, put the loon UV on there, put a little piece of that on there. So that the whole thing will just sink a little bit, you know, just that little bit of weight on the bite tippet will bring that fly down just a little bit.
Yeah.
I've never had great luck with tarpon on top water unless they're under 30 pounds.
Yeah.
Over 30 pounds. I have not had good luck.
It's definitely a situation that you're looking for. And otherwise I don't even attempt it, but,
yeah,
if the situation's right, which is first light, real calm, bunch of weeds around, they're slowly rolling. Mm-hmm. Now you can get them to bite. Like they just do one of those big slow rolls and sit there, you know, they haven't moved. Right. Like, and then they blow mm-hmm. bubbles and you're like, oh, that fish is exactly right there. Pull up to it real quiet and then put that out in front of it and just pull. And you don't even really see it coming. There's not even, it's so calm and the tarpon moves so slowly that there's not even a wake. Maybe you might see a flick of a tail and then it's like, oh, mm-hmm. it's coming. Like,
oh shit, blam. Here we go. It's yeah. on.
But it is one of the best bites in all of fishing. It really is. When
you're starting to tingle, a little bit. I can yeah. tell because you're doing this like what next week? Like you're getting
yeah.
at it.
Yeah. No. It has to be right. Everything has to be right. Sometimes you have those flies in your box and you don't use them. You know, you tie a whole bunch of them, hoping that you're going to get in that situation a bunch of different times, and then you just don't ever use them.
Yeah.
So this is
you gotta have a top
that I'm super excited about. These worms.
Yeah. The old chili pepper worm.
Yeah. So is that, what do you call that?
Talk furled? About that right there.
The furl. Is that a furled tail? Is that what that's called?
That is a feral tail. I'm not sure.
Furled. Furled is where you
would know better than I do.
Well, in trout fishing, you would have like a grasshopper body. You can have a furled body. So you take like yarn or any sort of long thing and you just start spinning it. And like a bimini twist mm-hmm. in the middle, it'll just twist up. And then you'll have mm-hmm. two strands that are coming like this. And then you just pinch it and tie it on the hook like that. And that's what they call a furled body.
And it stays like that.
Yeah. It's pretty good technique. That's what it looks like. This is because there's not an
that
end.
That sounds like
to
a
it.
Lot easier than I would do it.
Yeah. There's not an end to this, right? Like
no.
on the very end of this, it just rolls back down like a bimini twist almost.
Yeah, that's a much smarter way of doing it. I would have taken a piece of like 80 pound mono, tied it in, and then wrapped that thing.
Oh,
which would have been.
But your way would never foul.
Pursuing wild game in wild places. Tune in to Hunt Stand Presents Saturdays at 8:30 p.m. Eastern. Waypoint TV, the destination for outdoor entertainment.
my way would never foul. Correct.
But it but also would I don't, be I don't stiff know as a board.
And it would also take 45 minutes to tie that little bitty fly.
Yeah.
In true 239 flies fashion, let's take nice. Something incredibly simple and make it incredibly complex.
Yeah. Well, I like that. A lot of people, I mean, people have been fishing with the worm fly in the middle of the day when there's no worm hatch for a long time since yes. they first saw the Palolo worm and saw what tarpon do with it. But I always like to have the different worm flies, and I hadn't seen this one. I tie a bunch of different
that's a cool
ones.
One.
Some of them are super simple. Some of them are a little more complicated, but this one looks good to me. I like it. What's this material called?
I've seen some of the, I don't know exactly what that is. I've played around with them a little bit. We just got these Umpqua flies in, and I want to say that is the hairline, what do they call it? The wire free fox brush. That's what it seems like. It's very close to.
Okay.
And I want to say that's what it is.
So are you having success with these flies in your area? Are a lot of people
having? I haven't fished a lot of those in my area yet. I've mainly in my area, like if I go out with EJ, like we're throwing black and purple EP minnows, mm-hmm. two O's, that's it.
Yeah, I was just wondering because like, do you even have Palolo worm hatches up that way?
We don't. We don't have hatches.
Now, but, I wonder where the boundary is for that.
The farthest north that'll go.
Yeah, probably like Miami.
I bet you. I do know that the guys here throw them for. Or there are guys in the shop, both working and fishing here, that throw Palolo worms at tarpon. As long as it's in the spring, they'll throw it. Even if there's no hatch around, like even up here, wow. and have had success.
Yeah. Well, it's like, I guess when you're, like the striped
bass. Like what fish doesn't eat a worm?
Right. I mean, well, one that doesn't know what it is, I guess. But if you're striped bass fishing, a lot of times, the striped bass will move into another area where eels aren't really the source anymore. But you throw some sort of eel looking thing or cobia. Cobias eat a ton of eels up north and then they come down to the Keys. And I guess we have some eels, but it's not like. I mean, I've never seen a bait shop
main
sell
food
them
staple.
Like they do up there.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, like they sell these things of eels, which if you want to make sure that your girlfriend never wants to go fishing with you again, go fish with eels like and buy them at the store. That would be she's like, oh, I'm out. That's disgusting.
Yeah. Imagine walking into a store and buying a handful of eels. Like, give me a bushel of eels.
Yeah.
Put that on my tab.
They do, man. They sell them up in there. And I guess they're easy to catch, too. They trap them, or I don't know how they catch the bait eels.
Those are the shrieking eels.
but the cobia, if you throw like a big old, what are those things called? The giant hoagies. They look like an eel and they eat the crap out of them, even in a place where there aren't any eels.
And awesome snook bait too. I remember fishing with, you said hoagies. Like, I remember fishing with my buddy Ben one day. We were, it was pouring down rain in the middle of summer and we were fishing this, golf course pond that we were not supposed to be at. And, I'm walking around weight, just like, oh yeah, look at me at this, he's got a spinning rod, like a 4,000 reel on there and he's throwing these hoagies. Okay. And I'm like, nothing's going to eat that. That thing's a foot and a half long. Like you're fishing a golf course pond. He's like, watch this. And he winds up and he chucks this thing like clear over the lake. Okay. I mean, the lake is probably 40 yards long and he's like surf cast this thing, like in the air, like he hit a golf ball, like just on the other side of the lake. And I'm like, okay, you missed the water, like maybe try to get in the water next time. He's like, watch this, and just eases it into the water. And as soon as it hits the bank on the other side,
yes.
I'm just blowed up. I mean, 40 inch snook on the golf course pond on a foot and a half hoagie.
I can believe it. I can believe it. I can also believe
you think they're eating snakes over there?
Yeah, they'll eat snakes and lizards and probably whatever goes in the water. But it's interesting that he did it like that, because I used to fish golf course ponds all the time and I'd do it with a fly rod and I would stand 60 feet back from the pond 50 feet, 40 feet back from the pond, like nowhere even close, and throw a cast and the whole fly line lands on the grass and the leader rolls into the pond. And then you just kind of work it back to the bank like it was just a frog that just kind of fell in right there. And there's certain times of the year where those bass would be right on the edge. Like my dad would, he played golf a lot, and he's like, I hit another ball in the lake, and when I walked over there, there were three bass sitting right there in about an inch of water. And it's like, okay, perfect time to go over there and try to catch that. And that's what I would do when I was a kid. I didn't have much to do with the golf course other than the than catching the fish on there.
Other than the fish in the pond.
And getting run off on the wrong golf course. But yeah, man, they do get right up on that edge. That's a good way that your buddy fished it.
Yeah. Snook do it too, like right on the beach. I mean, you'll see you'll see the snook on the beach in here. Just like practically on the sand, putting sunscreen on their nose. I mean, they're damn near out of the water.
Yeah.
And you'll just be walking along middle of summer, look down, there's a 30-inch snook just sitting on a chase lounge, sunning his ass, just there he is.
Because that's like, where the food is.
You
want to
swim
somehow
in some water, buddy? Like
I know, but he's making
that's
a living
all the little
right
French
there.
Fry bits from the gumbo limbo. Everyone that's walking out, throwing their stuff in the water right there.
They'll eat that too, I'm sure.
Those are some good eating fish.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. But so it's crazy how fish will hang out in no water.
So do you have, like you sent me this little selection of flies. I asked for some of them. I didn't ask for others. I'm assuming that some of these are what you're forecasting to be the hot fly for the year. But do you see a trend in tarpon flies that it's moving to, or what?
I mean, I think the market and the fish are, I don't know if it's the fishery, but I definitely think that more guys want to throw synthetics now over naturals. I think for that very reason, like if time is scarce, if you got to sit down and tie them, you want to tie something that's going to last you for a while. Like saltwater fly fishing is very different than freshwater fly fishing, and that you can tie a fly on first thing in the morning and you might not take it off the rest of the day. You might just leave that thing on there. You know what I mean?
Like turkey hunting where you buy one box of shells and you have the same three shells in your gun the whole season. And then you finally kill the turkey at the end.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, more days than not we have set out, and especially on the, in the baby tarpon side of things, black and purple minnow tied on and get to the spot. Okay. Like got an eat on the first couple of casts and fish that all day. And it almost becomes a game. How many fish can you catch on this one fly before it's completely toast? So I think that largely like the trend in flies is moving to synthetics. And I think that's just because they're more consistent. A dozen of them, all the same dozen. They all look the same. They all look identical and they all fish identically.
Yeah.
Depending on how you want to look at it. Cause I mean, I guess there's arguments to be made from both sides on the form of, which one's more eco-friendly. I think largely like flies are moving more synthetic over natural.
What about hooks?
Just materials are easier to source too.
What do you see for hooks as far as where people are moving to when you have people that are requesting tied flies or you just hear in your shop, like a certain hook is, do you have any new hooks?
I think we do have new hooks. There's some really exciting new hooks out there. Like the new series from Umpqua. Umpqua just rolled out a bunch of new hooks that are really, really fire. I mean, jig hooks. The bendbacks. Gosh, I don't know why that word was escaping me. Bendbacks. Umpqua's got a brand new hook that's a bendback hook. So you don't have to like sit there and bend the hook anymore to like make it, it's super sticky, completely redesigned and works really well. I think that fly tires are always going to walk into a fly shop and ask for gamagatsus, mm-hmm. For saltwater, mm-hmm. Regardless of what we do or how much we market another a hook type or tie flies on something else. Like, you got any Gamagatsu SC15s? Like, what size are you looking for? 10 or 20? Both. Okay. I mean, that, you know, like, it's just one of those things, you know?
That hook is really good. That's my favorite hook.
It's everyone's favorite hook.
It works. But what was the big thing about that particular hook is that, you know, before, when that hook first came out, the alternative was like a Mustad 3407. And we would sharpen that with a file or a Dremel tool at home. And of course, when you do that, now it's going to rust way faster and way easier.
Yep.
And then all of a sudden, you know, this SC15 comes out. It's thinner. It's stronger. It is way sharper. And it worked. And we're using this little tiny hook. The first time I ever saw it, Fitz Coker brought it on the boat. And I was just like, what? You think you're going to catch a tarpon with that? And he's like, we're going to see. And we never had one straighten out. We never had, I mean, it was sticky as it could be. It did the job. And I was like, okay, I'm sold. That's fine.
Sold.
Yeah. And then at the same time, you had some other ones. I remember there was a batch of TMCOs that were breaking. They would break right behind the barb and just one after another. And then you'd have four or five that would do well. And then they just started breaking. And I was like, I'm never using that again. Like, I'm done with
that's that.
Maybe they fixed it.
I mean, there's, you hear those stories of, you know, I had this hook bend on me. I had this hook break on me. I had this. And, you know, we as fly fishermen get very, very picky about, or I don't want to say picky, but protective of our little homes, of what we know and love. If you get a hook that breaks on you, like, you immediately hate everything about that company. You're like, I'm done with you. Man. Like, it is the worst breakup ever. Yeah. And you got one bad hook out of, you know, the 50,000 they made that day.
Yeah, but when it happens over and over,
that's what you got. And all of a sudden,
that particular hook was very popular among, like, production fly tying. And Pete, your customers would bring them down and you'd look at it and you go, that's a beautiful fly. Whew, I don't know if we should trust that hook or not. And they're like, oh, well, I got a whole box of them. I spent $500 on these things. You're like, okay. And you tie it on and they get one bite a day and the hook breaks. You're like,
yep.
Problem. That's like the famous little meme, I guess, is the guide opens the box and says, those are beautiful flies. Boom. Let's use mine.
Yep.
Because they know
we got a cigarette butt tied on an SL12S short, like, you're throwing this.
Yeah. But they have confidence in it. You know, it's going to be a lot of work, and you get all that work done and either the fly fouls or the hook breaks or something like that. And that's your whole day right there. I fished
TMCO 600 SPs for a very long time. And it's the most expensive hook on the market, but it's incredibly sharp, incredibly strong, you know. But I had heard, somebody told me that they had one bend on them. And I'm like, there's no way. Like, the 600 SP, like, that thing's made, the price tag that's on it, you'd just assume that it was made with, like, pistachios and printer ink. Because those are the two most expensive things on planet Earth. They must have put two of them together to make this hook. You know, like, each hook, like, for a 10, like, they're over $1 a piece.
Wow.
And they're incredibly sharp. And, you know, they're really, really nice. And I fished them for years and never had a problem. And whenever somebody would tell me, like, oh, I had one of those bend on me one time, you know, I still fish them, but one time I had one bend on me. And I was like, well, you know, you're always going to find a bad batch of something. Like, something, you go to the same restaurant enough times, eventually you're going to get sick just because the odds are against you, you know? And eventually I had one bend on me. And I mean, I've fished this thing for 6 years and I've never had a single one break, bend, nothing. I hooked about a 35 pounder on a 7-weight and it was going for the trees. And it was like our third or fourth fish of the day. So we were in fuck off mode. It was just like, okay, like, you're not going to get in the tree. It's like, we're going to get you over here. I'm going to take a picture of you. And, like, just horse this thing around, hook fly, or the hook popped out. And I go to, like, cast it again. I look at it and it was bent. I'm like, there's no way. Like, this hook doesn't bend. So I called up one of the one of our customers who told me like, oh yeah, no, I'm back to it, but no, I bent one of those, so I'm done with it. Mm. And I told him, I was like, it finally happened. I bent one.
Yeah. Well, you know, as all that goes, I mean, you can definitely get some good advice from people, and there are probably definitely some hooks you should stay away from. But, you know, for the most part, it's whatever works for you, and what works for some people doesn't work for others. And I don't know. It's kind of personal. Yeah. Kind of personal, too.
It is.
But there are some tried and true ones like the SC15. That one's pretty well tested.
Yep. That one's pretty well damn good. That one always works.
Yeah. Well, listen, man, I'm proud of you for starting a new shop. It was cool to talk about these flies, and I'm ready to get out there and use them right now. It's going to be good.
Yeah. Hell yeah. Good.
Yeah. First thing I'm throwing is this worm.
When's your trip?
I'll be fishing all through the spring here, but in about a week and a half, I'm going to be doing a lot of tarpon fishing. So,
hell yeah.
Should be good.
Well, if you find yourself in the Bonita Beach area, you know where we're at.
Okay. I'll come by. I got to check out the new shop. All right. Yeah, let everybody know how to find you.
Well, we're online at 239flies.com. The website got the address on it. We're at the corner of Bonita Beach Road and US 41, right here in beautiful Bonita Beach, Florida. If you want to get us, it's not too hard. We're on Instagram and Facebook and YouTube at 239flies, and you can always pick up the phone and give us a shout.
All right.
Jimbo's standing by.
Very cool. All right, man. Well, thanks. I appreciate it. And look, you sent me a whole sticker pack. They'll send you a sticker pack too. Look at that. Those are cool stickers, man. I like them.
Throw them on the sign, like at any like sign down in the Keys, just like, you know, like right on there.
Yeah, at the marina, right with the
don't
boat.
Do that. I'm
right,
pretty sure that's illegal.
With the boat stickers. Well, I didn't do it. You did. Mm-hmm. It's your name on it.
I'm gonna blame it on Kevin. He's young. He can rebuild
them. Yeah, there you go. All right, Nick, man, great talking with you again, and good luck this spring. If you find some more hot flies, send them my way.
Same to you, Tom. Thanks for having me on.
Spend your Saturdays with Life on the Water. Join Captain Brandon Simmons for fishing, diving, travel, and so much more.
You want to succeed. You want to fish. You want to be one of the greatest.
Oh, look at that thing, dude.
Wow. Let's see what kind of trouble we can get into today.
Don't miss Life on the Water every Saturday night from 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV. The destination for outdoor entertainment.
I'm Will Cooper, host of HuntStand's Make Your Mark podcast. For even more content, be sure to watch the original films from HuntStand Presents on the Waypoint TV channel every Tuesday at 10 p.m. Eastern. Visit waypointtv.com to learn more.